This is number 9. We're looking at that very important part of the management process, which involves human resource management. We have come to that part of our discussion where we would mention some information in regard to performance appraisals. Once an employee has received training and has performed in a job for a period of time, it is normal for an organization to conduct a performance appraisal. A performance appraisal is a formal measure or rating of an employee's job performance compared with established job standards. Performance appraisal should be an integral part of a company's human resource management program. The reason for this is really several-fold. First, your performance appraisal will provide feedback on the success of previous training, and certainly it discloses the need for additional training. And then in addition, your performance appraisal aids in developing plans for improvement based on agreed-upon goals, strengths, and weaknesses. And then third, performance appraisal identifies growth opportunities. And then fourth, documents present job performance to provide managers with information to make decisions on salary, promotion, demotion, transfer, and termination. And then I think also we could say that performance appraisal provides the opportunity for formal feedback. We realize, of course, that each organization has its own performance appraisal system. How often a person is evaluated and how the person is appraised will certainly differ from organization to organization. A company may require a manager to rate an employee once a year or perhaps even twice a year. Ideally, the more frequent the contact, the greater the opportunity to clear up misunderstandings, offer guidance, and give encouragement and support. Companies, of course, differ on how they appraise employees. A company may use a subjective appraisal system or an objective appraisal system. A subjective performance appraisal system is based on the personal viewpoint of the manager. The manager, therefore, involves his attitude, time management, knowledge of the job, communication. These are perhaps some specific things that a manager may consider. But what does each one mean? And also, a rating scale perhaps could be established, such as excellent, good, fair, and poor. But again, what does each one of these mean? A more specific approach is an objective performance appraisal system. In this system, the specific performance areas are identified for the employee, as are the results expected. Many times in organizations, you're going to have various personnel changes. Personnel changes could involve someone moving up in the organization or someone moving on. Through the process of performance appraisal, management develops information to make employment decisions. For example, management can reward positive performance with an increase in pay based on the company's compensation program. Other possible uses of the appraisal include decisions on promotions, transfers, demotions, and even separations. In addition to management decisions for personnel changes, employees make decisions to find employment elsewhere and perhaps even to retrain. Human resource managers must deal with these personnel demands every day. Think about promotions, for example. One employment decision certainly involves promotion. A promotion is a movement by a person into a position with higher pay and greater responsibility. Promotions reward competence and ambition. They act as incentives to perform above the average in one's present job and to expand one's abilities, aptitudes, and knowledge through additional training. Promotion decisions, even though they should be rewards for performance, often are influenced by other factors. Federal and state law will affect the way in which promotions can be made. Affirmative action programs may even dictate who or what kind of persons get promotions. Promotion of the best qualified and most eligible may be blocked by seniority rules and union agreement. Regardless, promotion should be based as much as possible on performance. And then there are transfers. Second employment decisions certainly would involve transfer. A transfer is a lateral move from one position to another that has similar pay and responsibility levels. Usually the differences between the jobs are minor. Management uses transfers most often to fill temporary vacancies. Sometimes positions are created as a reward to allow a person to intern with or understudy in regard or in benefit for and anticipation of a higher job. These assistant to positions help the transferee to study the higher job up close and personal. Transfers may be used when management is preparing to replace a person who is about to move up or move out of the company. Transfers are also used to staff a new operation, a new department, a new division with experienced workers. Another employment decision is demotion. A demotion is a move from one position to another that has less pay or responsibility attached to it. Demotion can be used for punishment, but most organizations refuse it as an option, preferring instead to suspend the employee or assess a financial penalty through the forfeiture of pay. The reason for this reluctance is that a demotion staffs a position with an embarrassed and often angry worker who is not likely to be productive or any better behaved than he or she was in the former position. Demotions have their place in staffing, however. When a demotion is made to keep an employee as a temporary measure, it can be an important staffing solution. If a person's job is being eliminated, he or she may be offered a position that perhaps represents a demotion. There's no shame or embarrassment attached to such a move, only concern for the individual. The motive is to give the person time to retrain or become qualified for a higher position. The last category of employment decision made by management is separation. Separation is the loss of an employee to an organization through layoff, termination, retirement, or resignation. A layoff is temporary separation dictated by the level of business a company is experiencing. When and if business conditions improve, employees are recalled back to work. Termination is a permanent separation from the company. An employee is terminated or fired owing to unsatisfactory performance or violation of work rules. Retirement is a person's intention to stop working for the rest of his or her life. Many companies have mandatory retirement ages, although the 1978 amendment to the 1967 Age Discrimination Act prohibits private employers with 20 or more employees from forcibly retiring workers under the age of 70 on the basis of age alone. Other companies have developed early retirement programs as an incentive for developing loyalty. These programs also provide younger employees with the opportunity for potential advancement by encouraging older workers to retire, which opens up senior positions. Resignation is a voluntary separation in which a worker leaves to accept another position. Workers resign for various reasons, sometimes to take on a more challenging or rewarding job, or to move to other parts of the country, or perhaps to pursue new careers. Compensation of employees is a major responsibility area in human resource management. Human resource managers are charged with the job of designing a program to attract and retain qualified applicants. In doing this, the manager must measure the worth of each job and establish compensation that is fair in relation to other jobs in the organization and in the geographical area. Companies normally offer several forms of compensation based on the job itself and the effect of outside influences. Legislation, a union contract, rising prices, and competitive activities all influence management's pay systems. The Fair Labor Standards Act is a 1938 federal law that requires most employers to pay a minimum hourly wage and overtime pay of 1 1/2 times the base rate for any hours worked in excess of 40 hours per week. Executives and professional employees are exempt from this overtime provision, and the law also applies in different ways to different types of businesses. It has been amended extensively since the original minimum wage of 25 cents an hour went into effect in 1938. The minimum wage has risen, for example, to $3.35 an hour in 1989, to $3.80 an hour in 1990, to $4.25 an hour in April of 1991, and has continued to rise, of course, ever since. Unionized workers and managers may negotiate a contract that specifies certain pay rates and a program of pay increases. Rising prices affect the firm's pay rates by forcing them upward because management wants the company to seem fair and attractive to applicants and to hold on to current employees. Occasionally, managers find that skilled workers or professionals who are in short supply can demand higher than normal pay, and competitors' pay scales must be matched closely if a firm wants to attract and retain the best of applicants. Human resource managers use job evaluation as a technique of placing each job within its order of importance in the organization to establish its proper compensation. Factors such as responsibility, education, skill, training, and working conditions may be examined to help management decide where each job fits. The result is a job ladder or hierarchy that reaches from the company president to the lowest level of workers. Once jobs have been evaluated and placed in their order of importance, management, taking into account such previously mentioned factors as legal requirements, supply and demand, and so forth, creates pay grades. These are pay categories that relate dollar values to the job ladder developed through job evaluation. Each job may have a pay range of several thousand dollars, so job holders do not have to be promoted to get a raise. Compensation for a job is based on either time put into the job or what is produced on the job. In addition, compensation can be provided through bonuses, profit sharing, stock options, and pensions. Wages, of course, is compensation based upon hours worked, while salary is compensation based on weeks or months worked. It is intended to provide pay for the hours worked and not for what is produced. An hourly wage is the means of compensation generally provided for lower-level jobs in the organization. Managerial, professional, clerical, and secretarial employees normally are paid by salary. Compensation based on production, known as piecework, pays employees according to the number of units they produced. As an example, agricultural workers may be paid according to the number of boxes or bags of produce picked. In sales, employees may receive a commission, a percentage paid to a salesperson of the price for each item sold. After the base method of compensation is determined, management may choose to provide a bonus, profit sharing, stock options, and pensions. A bonus is incentive money paid to employees in addition to their regular compensation. It may be based on superior production, effective cost control, company earnings, or other performance factors. Some salespeople, for example, may receive a bonus for exceeding sales goals. Profit sharing refers to paying a portion of company profits to employees as a performance incentive in addition to their regular compensation. Stock option is a plan that permits employees to buy shares of stock in the employee's firm at or below the present market price. Some firms have payroll deduction plans to encourage employee participation, and occasionally top managers receive stock options, bonuses, and salary in a total compensation package. Companies may set aside large blocks of shares to sell directly to employees. Employees may also create a pension plan, which is a program to provide a retirement income to workers by holding a percentage of their earnings in reserve. The amount is then paid to them after their employment with the company ends. Pensions are not collected only upon retirement. Employees who qualify for pension benefits can receive a lump sum payment of their benefits when they resign or are terminated. Employees' contributions to the plan are matched by some companies with contributions made from company profits. In addition to direct compensation for the job being performed, human resource managers build into the work environment fringe benefits. Fringe benefits are non-financial rewards provided for employees. Most of them fit into certain categories. Life, health, and dental insurance, for example, or paid vacations, sick pay, holidays, funeral leave, and emergency leave. Discounts on merchandise or services, paid lunch and rest periods, tuition reimbursement, child care, and so forth. Indirect benefits typically have averaged between 22% and 35% of a company's payroll. Some firms are moving to provide a cafeteria plan for fringe benefits in which employees can choose a combination of insurance and other options best suited to their individual and family circumstances. These plans have proven to be so popular with employees that a recent report showed that employees, if given the option, would not return to the traditional insurance program. Another emerging trend is the number of companies providing either daycare or emergency daycare program for children of employees. While only 10% of companies with more than 100 employees offer full daycare services, companies such as Colgate-Palmolive, Honeywell, and so forth provide a range of options from letting parents work at home if a child is sick to paying 80% of the cost of a licensed daycare at home if the child is sick. This gives perhaps some ideas of the importance of this whole concept of human resource management. Maybe just by way of summary, once the organization is developed, the challenge to management is to match personnel with jobs identified and to provide for their long-range growth and welfare as members of the organization. Human resource management has this responsibility. As the staffing function of the organization, its activities include human resource planning, recruitment, selection, orientation, training, performance appraisal, and compensation. The human resource area is influenced by the legal environment in which it operates. Specific employment decisions are made within the guidelines of equal employment opportunity and affirmative action. The activities involved in human resource management should be viewed as a series of interrelated steps that managers and specialists perform to acquire and maintain the right people in the right jobs. These particular steps would include some of the following. First, human resource planning. This involves human resource forecasting, human resource inventory, and a comparison of these two to determine the need for recruitment. It also involves the development of job descriptions and job specifications as an aid to recruiting. Recruitment, which attempts to identify and attract candidates to meet the requirements of anticipated or actual job openings. Two sources for recruitment are inside and outside of the company. And then there's selection. Selection is an activity that decides which candidates out of the pool of applicants developed in recruitment have the abilities, skills, and characteristics most closely matched to job demands. The candidates go through a selection process that includes completing an application blank, a preliminary interview, testing, an in-depth interview, reference check, and perhaps even a physical examination. And then there's orientation. Orientation, which includes a series of activities that gives new employees information to help them adjust to the organization and their new jobs. And then there's training. Training, which attempts to supply the skills, knowledge, and attitudes needed by individuals to improve their abilities to perform their jobs. Types of training, of course, include classroom training, on-the-job training, vestibule training. We mentioned also the performance appraisal. This measures an employee's job performance compared with established job standards. There are two types of appraisal, subjective and objective. The result of the appraisal process and the action of employees cause a number of employee personnel actions. Employees may choose to resign or retire. Management may choose to promote, transfer, demote, lay off, or terminate an employee. Human resource managers are responsible for employee compensation. They must design a program to attract and retain qualified applicants. In doing this, they rate the worth of each job and establish pay grades. Compensation is based on time or on output. Additional compensation in the form of bonuses, profit sharing, stock options, and pensions also are developed. Indirect compensation would include such things as insurance, paid vacations, and so forth, would complete the compensation package. Human resource management also includes providing for health and safety of employees in the work environment. A major influence on this is the Occupational Safety and Health Act. We want to talk now, as we're continuing and moving our way through this understanding of management science, we want to discuss something about managing people. This has to do with motivation, and certainly it has to do with leadership. In our previous discussions, we have introduced certain concepts involved in staffing the organization. the manager now needs to direct energy and attention to the people selected to fill these positions. Organizations flourish through the efforts of individuals. Because people are the most important resource a manager has, managers must learn to work effectively with these people and through them. These next few moments, we want to focus on human relations in the work environment. Managers who understand why people act in certain ways will be more successful in moving an organization toward its goals than those who see management as something mechanical and rather an impersonal set of activities. Once an organization has acquired the best possible human resources to perform a job, each manager is faced with the challenge of creating a positive work environment where the employees can grow. The work environment is the key to developing and maintaining motivated workers who will achieve organizational objectives. But what element should a manager focus on in creating this kind of climate? I think we could say that managers create a positive climate by doing certain things. Managers create a positive climate when they recognize people as individuals. Managers create a positive climate by acquiring resources for goal accomplishment. Managers create a positive climate by providing rewards based on performance. Managers create a positive climate by developing, communicating, and reinforcing expectation for performance, group citizenship, initiative, and creativity. Managers create a positive climate by encouraging risk-taking. And certainly managers provide a positive climate by providing for participation in goal setting. Well, what is the result of this effort? The manager creates a stable work environment where expectations are known, where the individual is appreciated, where individual goals can be met, where all people receive equitable treatment, where trust exists, and where motivation is supported. The challenge for management is to provide the leadership that can create this climate. In essence, the manager and the management team are creating a culture. The culture includes what the organization says its values are. Its people, its work ethic, risk-taking, reward systems, and whether it lives in accordance with these various values. A factor that sets the foundation for creating the work environment is a manager's philosophy of management. A philosophy of management is the manager's attitude about work and the people who perform that work. The manager's philosophy is important because it influences both the leadership and motivation approaches that a manager will select. A manager who sees subordinates as ambitious, eager, wishing to do well, wanting to be independent, and enjoying work will take a far different course of action than a manager who sees his subordinates in an opposite vein. Douglas McGregor, professor of industrial management, has provided two sets of assumptions about workers. These sets of assumptions, Theory X and Theory Y, serve as a philosophical base for a manager's approach to working with subordinates. Theory X is a philosophy of management with a negative perception of subordinates, their potential for work, their general attitude toward work. It assumes that subordinates dislike work. They're poorly motivated, and they require, therefore, extremely close supervision. A manager who has these beliefs would probably control the group, use negative motivation, and refuse to allow individual employee decision-making. Theory Y, on the other hand, is a philosophy of management with a positive perception of subordinates' potential for and general attitudes toward work. It assumes that subordinates can be self-directing and will seek work and will find work as natural as rest or play. The natural outcome of this belief is a manager who encourages people to seek responsibility, involves people in decision-making, and works with people to achieve their goals. The important point about Theory X and Theory Y is that the philosophy of a manager, that the philosophy a manager has about people, influences the type of work climate a manager tries to create and ultimately how these people are treated. Remember, managers, like all people, often reap the attitudes they sow. If you expect someone not to perform, eventually that may happen. A direct outcome of a manager's philosophy of management is the ability to recognize and work with people as individuals. When we think about Theory X and Theory Y, again, if you can visualize in your mind perhaps a two-column chart, the left-hand column, some information about Theory X, the right-hand column, some information about Theory Y. First, the left-hand column, Theory X. What would Theory X, what would that philosophy of management be? Well, perhaps we could include these items. People basically dislike work and avoid it whenever possible. Because most people dislike work, they have to be closely supervised and threatened with punishment to reach objectives. Most people prefer to be told what to do. They have little ambition, they want to avoid responsibility, and they want security above all else. Theory X. Now let's look at the right-hand column of our two-column chart, Theory Y. Most people find work as natural as play or rest and develop an attitude toward work based on their experience with it. People do not need to be threatened with punishment. They will work voluntarily toward organizational objectives to which they are committed. The average person working in a good human relations environment will accept and seek responsibility. Most people have a high degree of imagination, ingenuity, and creativity with which to solve organizational problems. Although people have intellectual potential, managers only partially utilize it in modern organizational life.